Well, it's one of my two. I don't blame her, and that's okay. We are continuing our series, looking at the four birth announcements, how each gospel begins its story about who Jesus is and why Jesus matters. So we started 3 weeks ago with Matthew, then we did Mark, we did Luke, and today we are going to be in the Gospel of John. If you'd like to follow along, we're going to be in John 1. Although we're going to hit a couple of other places, and it's also going to appear on the screen. So if you want to pull out a Bible, you're welcome to follow along, but many of our verses will be on screen today. In his book, Night, Eliezer Weisel tells a story of his time in the Buchenwald concentration camp. Weisel was born and raised in an Orthodox Jewish household in what today would be Romania, and he was a devout student of the Torah. But when he got hauled off to Buchenwald, it changed everything. For while he was there, he lost his family, he lost his faith, and he lost all hope. In his book, Weisel writes, "Never shall I forget that first night, the first night in camp that turned my life into one long night, seven times sealed. Never shall I forget the smoke, the flames, the nocturnal silence, the moments of grief. Never shall I forget those things, even if I were condemned to live as long as God himself. Never." For Weisel, all seemed lost as his world fell apart. And he spent the rest of his life reflecting and writing on that experience, and then also seeking through his activism work to make sure that it would never happen to anyone else ever again. And later, his novel was re-released. And on that re-release, he stated this: "While he was there, everything came to an end. Man, history, literature, religion, God. There was nothing left. And yet we begin again with night." Night. It can seem dangerous, can it? That inky darkness that covers and seemingly consumes the world. I mean, it's not the things that go bump in the daylight, but the things that go bump in the night. Who's afraid of the dark? Well, if we were honest, many of us would agree, at least if we thought about it long enough. But night's not just about physical darkness, because it's also used in things like movies and books and art as a metaphor for danger, for evil, for the unknown and uncontrollable. Last weekend saw the opening of the final Star Wars film, at least for the next few years until Disney decides to make more money, right? But it tells the story of good versus evil through this dichotomy, this difference between the dark side and the light. And the story goes on to talk about an ancient evil that has returned that seeks to bring devastation and destruction on the galaxy. And it's a reminder that sometimes the dark side truly can be devastating. Over the past 2,000 years, Christians have written about the dark night of the soul, those moments of sadness and doubt and despair that seemingly come out of nowhere and often arise from the troubles of life, but often feel like they might consume our hope. You see, night isn't just about when the sun goes down. And it can seem dangerous, can't it? And if any time could be described as a night experience for the people of Israel, it would be the time leading up to the exile and the exile itself. Because for them, this was a time of darkness. It was a time of political darkness in which nations allied against them and their own kings practiced violence and oppression against their own people. So they faced dangers from without and within. It was a time of physical darkness as the armies of foreign nations descended on their land, killing and pillaging and burning what they could find, what they leave behind, and then keeping people walled up within their cities for weeks, months, years on end. And it was a time of spiritual darkness in which people pursued idolatry, they practiced spiritism, they consulted the dead, and they generally ignored God while killing his prophets. And so it's in the midst of this darkness that Isaiah begins to write and prophesy. And he summarizes what we would call their night in chapter 8, verses 20 through 22. He says this, "Consult God's instruction and the testimony of warning. If anyone does not speak according to the word, they have no light of dawn. Distressed and hungry, they will roam through the land. And when they are famished, they will become enraged and looking upward will curse their king and their God. Then they will look toward the earth and see only distress and darkness and fearful gloom. And they will be thrust into utter darkness." Not exactly a message of hope here, is it? We hear distress, hunger, rage, curse, darkness, grief, and gloom. They had no light. These are the words that Isaiah chooses to use to describe the time leading towards the Assyrian and Babylonian conquests and then the impending exile of God's people. Indeed, Weisel's quote might fit very well for their time period too, because in the exile, everything came to an end for them. Man, history, literature, religion, maybe even God. There is nothing left. And yet we begin again with night. It was a darkness that felt utter and complete, a time in which it seems their night might never end. But, Isaiah says, just when all seems lost, he gives them a word of hope. And that word is nevertheless. Now, whatever translation you might be using here in Isaiah 8 and 9, it might have something like but or and yet. But when all seems hopeless, Isaiah gives them a message of hope. When it seems that the darkness is complete and that night will never end, God speaks into that never. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who are in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, but in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. And he says this is going to start in Galilee, that northernmost allotment that belonged to Zebulun and Naphtali, two of the tribes. It was the first area that was overrun and destroyed by the Assyrians during their conquest in the early 720s BC. But the first that were conquered, now they will be the first that will be honored by the new work of God. Because he says, starting here, for these people, the people that are walking in darkness, they will have seen a great light. And on those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. Night is ending, Isaiah declares. Light is coming. Darkness is going to be defeated as a new light dawns. Those who have been hopeless will now live with hope. Those who have been weighed down with despair will leap with joy. Those who have been oppressed will have freedom. Those who have known only war will now taste peace. Light is breaking forth. Darkness is dispelled, and the world will be made right. And for those who have been living in darkness, this message would seem almost too good to be true. How is this going to happen? They would wonder. Who is going to save us from the night and usher in the light? And Isaiah's response is audacious. It's grandiose. It's seemingly impossible. And it can only be accomplished by God himself. Because it continues, "For to us a child is born. To us a son is given." And this little child, this newborn baby, will be from God himself. And it will be the one who will cause the light to break forth. And he's given this impressive series of titles, isn't he? Imagine seeing this on a business card. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Those are the titles that Isaiah wants us to hear. In fact, they're the very titles that are used exclusively of God in the Old Testament. Because no Israelite would ever refer to a person as God, but God himself. And Isaiah wants us to hear that he will be king forever. He will establish justice and righteousness. He will end war and usher in perfect peace. God is going to enter into their darkness and bring about light. It's God who is going to send a son to reign and bring about peace. But he won't come as a hulking warrior, but as a little child. Not as a military dictator, but as a prince of peace. And so the people listened, and they longed for the day in which this Messiah would arrive. You see, they knew how God was going to accomplish this. They didn't know when. So they waited and watched. They anticipated, and they endured. Because while we wait for the light, yet we have to begin with the night. And Israel entered into a long time of night as they waited for Isaiah's prophecy to be fulfilled. And it was a time of political darkness for them as they were exiled in the 720s and then again in the 586. And then they return home, they have a little bit of hope, but things never were the same from then on because they were ruled by the Persians and then the Greeks and then traded back and forth between two of the Greek remnant states that were there. They achieved a small measure of freedom for just a short time, only to be conquered and oppressed by the Romans. They sat in the midst of political darkness, and it was a time of physical darkness, of oppression, as the people endured high taxes and rebellions and famines, terrible rulers, garrisons of pagan soldiers, and governmental crackdowns. And it was a time of spiritual darkness, because the temple was growing and expanding, but there were great rifts and divisions among the religious factions. And they hadn't experienced a legitimate prophet in more than 400 years. And the people were just yearning for a teacher with just some authority. And it was into this night that God put his plan into motion. And this is how John describes this moment. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not overcome it. Or you might have understood it, both fit in the Greek. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. At the beginning of his gospel, John makes some incredible connections here. Through Jesus, God is beginning something new. But it's new, but also it's as old as time. It's from creation itself and even before that. Sending Jesus is what God has wanted to do and planned to do since the beginning. And God is doing all of this through the birth of a child. You see, John doesn't have a birth narrative like Matthew and Luke, but he does share a story connected to an ancient promise that God will come and work. For to us a child is born, and the Word becomes flesh and dwells among us. And he will be called Wonderful, Mighty, Everlasting Prince. And God's zeal will accomplish this. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. And those living in a land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. And in him was life. And that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. That's the picture that John wants us to grasp of who Jesus is. And later, Jesus then goes on to describe himself as the long-awaited light. And he begins his ministry not in the political center of the realm and the city of Jerusalem, but he starts in Galilee, that northernmost province that once belonged to Zebulun and Naphtali. And it's there that Jesus begins to proclaim what he came to do, to bring the kingdom of God into the world. And later he goes on to proclaim this, I am the light of the world. And whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And while I'm in the world, I am the light of the world. And that's what we stop to celebrate. Hopefully we celebrate it every day, but we really stop and the world kind of focuses in on during the Christmas season. And we remind ourselves that light has come into the world, that God stepped in a mighty and powerful way through the birth of his Son. We are reminded that darkness has been defeated, that the true life that brings light and life has come into the world. And the darkness cannot understand it, but it definitely can't overcome it. And so we celebrate the light of the world. And the world could use a little bit more light this season, couldn't it? Because we're not immune from political and physical and spiritual darkness in 2019 headed into 2020. And that could be on a global scale with stories of violence and war, oppression, persecution, hunger, hatred, and hurt. That could also be on the personal scale, because we're not immune from the effects of darkness either. Many of us still long to see the light. The holidays can be an especially difficult time for many. One recent survey stated that 45% of people in North America experience holiday sadness or winter blues. So if you're there today, you're not alone. Look around the room. Pretty much every other person you see might be there too. One friend I spoke to recently just talked about struggling with life. You see, they had expected to be married by now, and their career had stalled. This is a friend of mine from the military, and he has decided that his military career really needs to come to an end too. And right now, he's at a sense of loss. He doesn't know where to go from here. And it's feeling especially dark right now at Christmas. Another friend lost an adult child this year. And in talking to them this last week and a half, told me that Christmas holds a sense of sadness and longing. Another friend is awaiting word from a doctor on whether or not their cancer has returned, and they will find out right after the new year. And yet another friend I spoke to earlier last week reminded me they deal with depression each holiday season due to a life full of disappointments, desertions, and despair. And asked me to remind them that this was a season of hope. Many of us need a little light in the midst of darkness. They're not the only ones. So if you find yourself in the midst of some darkness, be it physical, emotional, relational, or spiritual, please speak up. There's no shame in it. Because we have to acknowledge darkness and night. You have to bring them into the light in order to receive the light. You see, we believe in the one who is the light of the world. We believe that darkness can't overcome that light. We believe that the light brings life to those who are in need. We believe that we believe in the one who searches and seeks out those who walk in darkness so that they can know the light that he has and is. You see, Jesus told us to come to him all who were weary and heavy laden. So if you feel weary and heavy laden today, realize that's the very moment Jesus wants you to come. We have our hope in Jesus, the one who is God with us, the wonderful counselor and mighty God, the everlasting Father and Prince of Peace. And he wants nothing more than to be the one who brings life and light into your darkness and despair. And that's the announcement that kicks off John's gospel. That true light has come. And that by believing, we might have life in his name. So today, if you haven't made him your Lord and Savior, if you haven't allowed him to bring his light into your life, then I pray that you will do that today. Because there's nothing better than letting his light brighten our darkness. And if you have done that, if you've given Jesus your light, but your life, but sometimes life still seems dark, realize you're not the only one. and to hold on. To realize that you haven't been abandoned, but God is right there with you today as well. And I pray that if you're a follower of Jesus today, that you will remember that he is the light of the world, and he calls us to be the light of the world too. Because Jesus said, I am the light of the world, but he goes on to tell his followers, you are the light of the world. And so we too can bring light in the midst of darkness. Every time you speak hope to someone in need, you share your faith through your words or your actions, you feed someone who is hungry, you give a coat to a kid in need, you sit and mentor a student who doesn't have a dad in their life, you bring light in the midst of darkness. When you listen to someone who needs a little bit of love, you help a student grow in their faith, or you serve your neighbor, not because it's convenient, but because God told you to love. Each time you give grace to somebody who doesn't deserve it, or you go out of your way to be a blessing to others, you become a conduit for God's light to break into the world. Anytime you bless someone in Jesus' name, teach a Bible class, cook a meal, sew a blanket, you minister to someone in prison, you visit a person who is shut into their home, or you use whatever other talents and gifts God has given you, you allow God's light to shine through you to enlighten and enliven others. When our actions are a reflection of our faith and the light breaks forth through us in our lives. We're in the need of some light today, aren't we, in our world? We can rejoice and celebrate because the light shines in the darkness and cannot be overcome. We serve an amazing God. A God who brings life and light, who brings hope and help. And this morning, if there's something that you need, please make that known. You're welcome to respond in just a moment as we sing together. I think it's 6:22, if you didn't use your little ribbon. You're welcome to respond as we sing together. You can come to the front. If you just want to grab somebody before you leave, please do that too. But may you recognize the light of the world. Let's sing and worship together this morning.